This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown. I am so amped to share my next guest story with you. I get to chat to triathletes from all over the world with some pretty fascinating stories. But this one, I love. I absolutely love what he's doing. I'm talking about Curtis Feltner, and you'll hear all about it on today's podcast. And I hope you are going to enjoy it. I thoroughly enjoyed my chat, and I hope you get lots out of it as well. Before we get into my chat with Curtis, just a big thank you to our sponsor of this edition of the podcast. It is brought to you by Wheel Science. If you're looking for high-performance race wheels, then look no further than Wheel Science. They've done a whole bunch of independent tests on the wheels. They are UCI approved. They come with a lifetime worldwide warranty. Plus, they'll deliver anywhere in the world. And you can get all the performance for half the price. So if you'd like to find out more about Wheel Science, all you need to do is get to this URL. Okay, it is thekonaedge.com/wheels. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels. And make sure that you use the coupon code KONAEDGE at checkout to get 10% discount. So that coupon code, once again, KONAEDGE. And the URL to get to is thekonaedge.com/wheels. The link is in the podcast player. Just look below where this is playing from. You can click straight through and go check it. Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown. It's good to have you on board. And we head to Montana now for this edition. And it's great to catch up with our next guest. And I'm so amped to share his story and what he's up to. And I think it's because I'm kind of living vicariously through him. And you'll find out why in a mo. But a great pleasure to welcome Curtis Feltner onto the podcast. Curtis, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brad.
Curtis, before we chat any triathlon, let me just fill people in what the story is. You're at the moment living in a van, living your triathlon dream. You no longer an age grouper. You've turned pro, and we'll talk about your sort of pro debut in a mo. But tell me about this living in a van, man. It's my dream life.
Yeah. So last year, my girlfriend Devin and I, we sold our house. And that was actually right before Kona last year. And we were actually living in a minivan for a little bit while we did like the Kona trip and the Chattanooga Worlds last year. And then after we got back from Kona, we started the search for a van, found this big Ford. It's like kind of a box truck shape. It's like 7 feet by 12 feet in there, and built the whole interior for the last 7 months until the week before I raced Boulder, or 2 weeks before I raced Boulder this year. And so far we're 6 weeks in. We've got 5 bikes in there, train and live right out of it. It's great.
five bikes, yourself, your girlfriend, and a couple of dogs.
Yep, and 2 dogs, yeah.
I love it. Why? I think the big question is why are you doing this? I mean, I think it's amazing. I love the, I mean, I've been following you on Instagram and I read your blog, but why are you doing this?
I think like the main reason was probably because doing it as an age grouper and like going to the world championships and stuff was really expensive. And I knew like traveling as I turned pro, it would be like not really reasonable to fly everywhere or even to drive and like try to keep a job at home. So we just decided to take the whole thing on the road. And our house was way up on the market, so we were able to kind of pile a bunch of cash by doing that to live on for a while. And then, it was kind of like definitely a money-based decision, especially as far as triathlon goes. And we had done this a few times before in vans, never full-time, so we were comfortable with the idea. We knew it would work. It took a little longer to get on the road than we wanted, but yeah.
You said you've upgraded the van. The first van I saw was pretty small, and I saw 2 bikes on the back on a bike rack, and I was like, man, that must be cozy in that thing with the two of you and the 2 dogs. But the new van, it's like a 5-star hotel on wheels.
Yeah, it's spacious in there, man. I have actually rode my bike inside the van 2 days ago on the trainer. Like, there's enough room in there for that. but we have a kind of a bed space up top that's permanent, so we don't have to make our bed all the time. We've got a shower, a little kitchenette, a fridge, heater, some fans to get airflow when it's hot. What else? We have a guest bed. Our couch folds into the guest bed.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I love it. But in saying that, it sounds, I mean, I say you're living, or I'm living vicariously through you. It's something I've always wanted to do, was tour around in a van. But it's tough. You're not on vacation. You still, as a professional triathlete, you're working. So you've got to train and do your thing. And running and cycling wherever you are is pretty easy. But you were saying before the call, swimming is the real challenge.
Yeah, swimming can be really tough, especially when you're traveling, like as we're going across the country, like we've been doing the last few days. Like pools sometimes can be just the memberships. It'll be like a members only, or you have to come with a member, or if you are a guest and they do allow it, it'll be $20 sometimes. And it's just kind of a headache. Sometimes you can find free, like the YMCAs, they'll do a 3-day trial in a lot of places. So I just have to sign up for the trial and it's free. Sometimes you get lucky like that, but it's definitely a pain to swim when you aren't staying somewhere long term, for sure.
But the biking and running, I mean, for someone who's stuck in the same place all the time and tends to ride the same routes and run the same routes, it must be pretty cool. Sort of new environments, new routes. It also comes with its challenges, because I think a lot of the places you go to, you don't particularly know the area as well, so not knowing where to go and that sort of thing. But it must really mix things up for you.
Yeah, definitely. And the internet helps a lot with that. Like Strava has been really helpful, like piecing together rides, or just finding trails for running or something like that. You just look on Strava and like basically find the hot spots, or like sometimes there's longer segments, so I'll be able to determine like if a trail is long enough or something. And then just like Googling road cycling in the town that I'm in or whatever, and then usually there's like one best route, like the one you have to do if you come here, and it's like I get to do every city's best route sometimes. Yeah. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Curtis, let's take a step back and just talk about the sport in general. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your sporting background. I mean, what do you come from? I mean, were you pretty active growing up as a kid? What sort of sports were you into?
Yeah, as a kid, I was I played everything, man. like we did 4 sports a year, pretty much. I played the big 3 in America, you know, baseball, football, basketball, and then I ran a little bit in the summers. Once I got a little older, track, we did like a summer track program. And then in high school, I played baseball for a year and then ran cross country and track through the rest of high school.
Were you pretty good? I mean, from a competitive level, were you pretty competitive?
Yeah. I was never going to win a race, but I was the number one runner on the team my senior year, but I didn't take very good care of myself. Like I grew up in Kansas, so I ate a lot of fast food and never really learned the nutrition thing. I don't know if that's all to blame with it, but yeah, I wasn't, I didn't have any colleges looking at me or anything. I did walk on for 1 year at Kansas State. And I was lucky to go to the meets. I was kind of like the last runner that would go to meets. So yeah, that's my running background.
When did triathlon come onto the sort of radar for you?
So after I ran in college, I actually dropped out of college and started snowboarding, and I had been doing that for I guess 8 years before I found triathlon. Snowboarding like sometimes as much as 200 plus days a year. Between Colorado and Oregon and Mount Hood, Oregon in the summers, you can snowboard all the way till Labor Day. So that's how I was getting more than half my year of snowboarding. And then, I found triathlon the first year. I didn't do Mount Hood in the summer. Just trying to find something to do. And I was working at a bar where that hosted an event called Pacific Crest in Sun River, Oregon. And so I just kind of learned that I didn't even really know it existed before then. That event kind of showed me the sport. And then I tried a sprint triathlon later that year on a fixed gear bicycle.
I love it. But let's talk a little bit about the snowboarding, because I mean, that's played a pretty big part in your life as well, and something you're really good at.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's snowboarding was, I hurt myself a lot. I've had like quite a few like pieces of metal put in my body and stuff like that from it, but I wouldn't change anything, man. That it was fun. I got to travel around a lot, and it was cool. Yeah, snowboarding was I don't really know what to say about it.
I mean, it's an incredible sport, and physically pretty demanding as well. You mentioned having pieces of metal put in you. I mean, it's hard. I mean, you can do some serious damage. But as far as sports go, I mean, if you look at triathlon compared to snowboarding, I mean, they're worlds apart. I mean, they're two totally different sports. I'm amazed that you've moved so well from snowboarding into triathlon as well as you have.
Yeah, and I mean, I still snowboard quite a bit in the winter. Like last year, I probably went like 50 to 60 days. Honestly, I think it's sort of helpful because I do take quite a bit of time off in the winter, and it's just like I don't do it quite as extreme as I used to, but it's a good activity to sort of move the body in a different way, I think. And knock on wood, I've been mostly injury free from triathlon, and I think just having that totally separate activity in the winter definitely is helpful with that.
It's interesting. A few weeks ago, I caught up with a fellow South African who lives in Switzerland, in Lucerne, Evert Forsten, and he was saying to me in his off season, he does a lot of cross country skiing, and that is very sort of aerobically challenging. So it's, again, using different muscles but staying fit. I've never snowboarded in my life. How physically demanding is it from a fitness perspective? Do you need to be pretty fit to be able to do it?
Not really. I mean, it's definitely like one of those sports where you see a lot of people like drinking beer and smoking cigarettes while they do it, for sure. But I mean, it's certainly at the high level, like the guys you see in the X Games, those guys do like, they lift a lot of weights and do a lot of exercise and strengthening outside of the sport. And those guys are really fit, for sure. But just to be like the average guy that's like chasing powder at the mountain, you don't really need to be crazy fit.
Well, Curtis, you've obviously discovered some talent and some ability in the world of triathlon. Tell me the transition from that first sprint triathlon on a fixie to where you are today. I mean, that's quite a step up from a sprint to turning pro and racing Ironman on the pro circuit.
Yeah, so that was the only one I did that year, and then the next year I got in shape for the race that I was that I had been working the bar for the years before, and learning to swim was the real challenge for that, because I had never been a swimmer in my life, and that was an Olympic distance, and it was like a two loop in the lake, and I think I swam like 36 minutes or something. I learned how to swim with YouTube, so that was cool. And then that one kind of lit the fire. I like rented a road bike and tied my shoes out of the water and just had running shoes on the whole time on flat pedals for that race. And then that one kind of lit the fire. And then after that, I bought a TT bike, a used TT bike for $400 or something on Craigslist. And then by the end of that season, I had got that Olympic swim down to, I think I swam a 24 or something. I did the lifetime Olympic in San Diego, California, and ended up going, I think I went 208 there or something, and that the first Olympic was 240. So that season had like a big big learning curve for sure. And like the next year I got a coach, and then things started getting a little more serious, and that was the year I did my first Ironman and qualified for Kona. And then, after that, I switched coaches. Matt Lieto is my coach now. And I've been, I struggled the last 2 years. I got injured snowboarding. I broke my back once, and then I guess the second injury wasn't snowboarding. I just broke my foot at a concert on 4th of July. So we weren't like, since Matt's been my coach, this is kind of the first season where we're like, we've been injury free to this point. The first time the injury was in May, the second was July. So they were kind of like big hindrances on the season. So it's been cool to finally get a good sort of full pull on the season.
I was going to say, has Matt forbid you from doing any snowboarding or going to any concerts?
No, but he will joke heavily about me not getting hurt when I go to do stuff like that, for sure.
Could you tell me a little bit about racing as an age grouper and going to Kona? I mean, you've obviously got a competitive streak in you. I mean, you like you said, you were a pretty good runner back in the day. Snowboarding, you were very active in and taking it, were very competitive as well. And obviously, I mean, you look at that first season in or first year in triathlon and the gains you made. Those sort of gains don't come if you're not competitive. I mean, it's very seldom that'll happen that someone doesn't have ambition. And you've obviously got it. Tell me a little bit about racing as an age grouper and chasing a Kona slot.
Yeah. I got to make one comment about the competitive thing. So that the event that I used to bartend for, the whole reason I got into I joke about this, but I think it actually is kind of the reason I got into triathlon is, I was serving a whole bunch of triathletes at the bar, that I was working at. And I'm sure you know how triathletes can be race week. They're just kind of like really picky and can be like hard to deal with sometimes. And from like the outside perspective, I was just like, man, I'm going to do this event and I'm going to beat these people with this. And that was sort of where the whole motivation like originally started, was like just like being fed up with like being in the service industry for a bunch of triathletes and just wanting to like beat them at it. But yeah, to the Kona stuff, and like, really honestly, I think the first time I qualified for Kona, I kind of just got lucky. It was when Louisville had moved to the same weekend as Kona, and I had kind of picked that strategically as like, well, everybody that's going to qualify is already going to be there. And I mean, I didn't really go that. I went 9:49, and that course is, I mean, the last every year since, it's taken like sub 9:20 to win the age group. And it was, I think I just got pretty lucky with that first qualifier. And then the second time I qualified was actually a half in China. When they first started having those races in China, and that actually, I had a really good race there. I was the second age grouper overall, but, yeah, it was, I mean, I think Ironman does a really good job of setting up age group racing. It's something that's really unique to triathlon. And it's, before I got into it, it's something I didn't really know existed, that you could be so competitive with other people in sport at this age, you know. And it's, I mean, I'm really glad I found triathlon because of that, because that's definitely something that was missing from my life. You know, I was an endurance athlete younger, and I definitely missed it for sure.
I love it. Well, let me just correct you on something, Curtis. You were saying that triathletes sometimes can be quite difficult in race week in the build up. It's not sometimes, mate. It is all the time. Let's call a spade a spade here. Let's not beat around the bush. Have you turned into one of those triathletes? Are you pretty tough to deal with in the week leading up to a race?
Devin might disagree with me, but I think I've done like a pretty good job of not turning into that person. I don't know.
I probably am. I love it. Let's talk about the decision to turn pro, because I think there's a lot of age groupers listen to this podcast and obviously aspiring and racing on the Big Island. And I think many of them think, gee, I wonder what it would be like. Tell me the thought process. What drove you to make that decision to go, you know what, I'm going to give this a bash?
I think a lot of that came from just, it stemmed from doing, doing the world championship races 2 years in a row. And it got to the point where it was like, well, am I just going to do that again next year? And then do that again the next year. And like I said before, it's really expensive to fly to Kona every year and find a place and to get to wherever. I mean, Chattanooga was nice because it was in the States, but I mean, usually it's in South Africa this year. That would be probably a pretty spendy trip. And, yeah, I mean, that was a big part of it. And like you said before, the competitiveness in me, I just wanted to be able to race against the best, you know. I mean, knowing full well that I wouldn't be anywhere near the top of the podium as a pro, but to me, I'd rather have that shot to race against the best than to be wondering as an age grouper.
Well, I mean, you say you don't think you'd be close to the top step of the podium as a pro. You've got off to a pretty decent start. Let's talk about your debut in Boulder. I mean, you must be pretty chuffed with your first outing as a pro.
Yeah, that was great. Boulder was much more. I performed way better than I thought I would there. I just actually had a talk with my friend Kinsey. She's a new pro as well from Bend, Oregon, and we were talking about how scary it is looking at the start list. And yeah, I definitely had this huge fear looking at the start list in Boulder. I'm like, man, I know like who 12 of these people are. Like, and I don't really follow triathlon like that well, as much as maybe some people do. So for me to recognize that many names on the list, and then there were another 24, there was 36 people on that start list, and yeah, that had me going, man. The nerves were real for sure. And then yeah, I don't know. At the same time, showing up knowing all that and seeing all these guys at the pro meeting the day before and getting to that start line, there was really, I mean, I had nothing to lose, you know. It was, and the race plan was kind of around that, was like, if I blow up, so what, you know? If I try as hard as I can and nothing comes of it, there's not much difference as a pro from being seventh or 36th in that race, you know. None of them are winning money. So it was cool though, but I actually did, I held together on the day, and it was really hot, which I think growing up in Kansas, that sort of plays in my favor. I grew up in heat and ran in heat as a kid, so for whatever reason I usually have better performances than most, I guess, in heat. But yeah, and I came in 11th there at in a pretty big PR at 4:03.
I mean,
so that was cool.
You talk about looking at the start list and seeing those names. It's one thing looking at the start list, but standing on the start line about to swim in the first sort of group that's heading out, that must be, especially having raced as an age group, but that must be surreal.
Yeah. And that start, particularly in the swim, I'm in the second row because I'm not a great swimmer. And, I look to my right and Ben Hoffman's next to me, and I'm like, is there a third row? Should I go back farther? Like, yeah. And that was, I mean, I think he was in the second, he was behind a bunch of Aussie guys, which, I mean, they can all swim like crazy. So
I love that. Curtis, looking at that first outing and you going into it, your first pro race, and like you say, not massive expectations. You just want to go there and go as hard as you can. If you blow up, you blow up, so what? But having a performance like that, does that put more pressure on you for the next one, or does it sort of fire you up even more that you go, hang on a sec, I'm in this thing, like I've got a shot. I mean, it's still early doors, and if I keep doing the work I'm doing, I can do this.
Yeah, I mean, sort of to an extent. I definitely felt all of the same nerves the next week. And it, there was sort of like a, well, man, I got 11th there. Like, am I going to be fast enough to do that again? You know, especially cause it was one, I raced 1 week after Boulder at Steelhead. And that was a huge question mark, was like how much I was going to have that week, being, it was 8 days in between, Saturday to a Sunday race. And no, I definitely felt all the same fears the next week, though, for sure. And it didn't, like, I would say Boulder was a success for me, but it was still kind of it didn't really instill a whole lot of confidence. And maybe now after Steelhead, there's a little more, but I think that sort of fear on the starting line will probably maintain through the rest of this season for sure, if not more seasons to come.
Well, what you've experienced now, I mean, like I said, there's probably a lot of age groupers thinking, man, it would be awesome to turn pro. How big a step up is it from age group racing to pro?
For me, honestly, I feel like not that big of a step, because I was in the 25, 29 age group, and there's guys that break 9 hours in Kona in that age group. So it's like, when I was able to race against guys in my age group, it felt similar, because I didn't always win my age group, in Kona, I was not even in the top 10. But that's one thing that's really cool about triathlon, is that line is really blurred. And I don't think it is like a giant step, and it's not like all of a sudden you need to be 20 minutes faster or something when you jump up, you know. It's cool that you can just kind of do the same thing and move up and obviously start more on the bottom, but yeah, it's triathlon's sort of unique, and I've always said, like, this is kind of the only sport that I've ever seen that in, where the line is so blurred between amateur and pro.
Yep, absolutely. I think golf has got it to an extent as well. I mean, the top guys in the world are really good, but if you look at some of the smaller tours, I think it's pretty much the same, that you can get guys that were playing amateur and can turn pro and almost make a living. But yeah, I mean, that's a whole debate for another time. But what's in store for you for the rest of the season, race wise, and where's the van going for the rest of the season?
So right now we're headed back towards Oregon. We've got a bunch of weddings to go to in September. So we'll be in Oregon for the better part of 5 weeks. One exception being going down to Santa Cruz for 70.3 Santa Cruz. And then, I don't have any races scheduled after that, but, I'm bad at signing up ahead of time. All these races I've kind of signed up like less than a week before the deadline. But I have my eye on Waco and that new race in Palm Springs, but definitely some space in there to fill some others in. I just haven't really looked into it much yet.
Brilliant. Well, it's been great catching up. Curtis, I look forward to following your progress. I'm loving the blog, and I'll link to your blog and to your Instagram as well. Folks can follow your progress and see what you're up to. But like I said, man, I think people are going to be living vicariously through you, hating their day jobs, clocking in, clocking out, while you're living the life, traveling the US and racing Ironman. It sounds like a horrible life, man. I want it.
Yeah. It's not bad. Like you said earlier, though, it's definitely hard sometimes.
Absolutely. Sure.
Tiny space in there.
And that's it for this edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to everybody who has left us a review on iTunes. If you haven't done it yet, I'd really appreciate it if you wouldn't mind doing that. It helps sort of grow the numbers, so to speak. iTunes is the biggest platform that we get listeners from for the podcast, and the more reviews and ratings that we get, the more iTunes goes, cool, we're going to put you in front of more triathletes. So if you haven't left us a review yet, please do consider doing so. It only takes literally a couple of seconds, and it helps us out big time. Thank you to our guest today, Curtis Feltner. I thoroughly enjoyed that chat, and I look forward to talking about his Ironman swim in a week from now. And thanks to the sponsor of this edition of the podcast. It was brought to you by Wheels Science. If you're looking for new race wheels, make sure you check out Wheel Science. Okay, all the performance at half the price. The URL to get to is thekonaedge.com/wheels, and they'll also give you 10% discounts for being a loyal listener of the Kona Edge. All you have to do is use the coupon code Kona Edge at checkout. Until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.